All right. I have got a full house both with this panel and in the waiting room. So we're going to go ahead and let these lovely people in. There we go. Look at that. Look at all those wonderful, eager people popping in here. You're going to have a great audience today, I know. And I said earlier, I'm going to, you out there in the audience, don't make a liar out of me. I said you all were a good group and a chatty group and that you would participate with them. So let's live up to that, okay? But I want to welcome everybody really quickly, letting a whole bunch more people in. See, I told you they pop in right on time. It's amazing every week. Here we go, a couple more. And then there we go. I'll just share a couple of quick announcements because I want to get out of the way because we have five amazing guests today, not just one or two like we sometimes do. So let's go ahead and get this going. Let us got to pay the bills, got to say thank you to our sponsors and things like that. So just in case you weren't sure, and you know, we all have so many Zoom links in our mailboxes right now, make sure you clicked the right link. So what we're going to do is you are at the USDLA Friday webinar series, and just more people keep wanting to come and see you. I can't believe this. So they're just flying in the door. There we go. I think I got them all. Okay. I'll catch the door. I don't want the door to hit anybody on the way. There we go. All right. So you're in the Friday webinar series. I really appreciate you being here today. I'm Valerie. I am on the board at USDLA and love to see you all. I see many familiar faces. Today, like I said, we have a full house. I'm going to let them do the introductions in just a minute, but just know that we've got five amazing people here today to talk to you about creating meaningful online learning communities, which is a very popular topic, by the way. So thank you for coming in and talking about that. Also coming soon, just want to remind you, this is not the only webinar. Next week, leading into the weekend, we have Matthew Compton Clark coming in. And then the following week, we're going to be doing another water cooler talk. This is backed by sort of popular demand. We had one a while back. This is four of our board members. They're going to come in. The rules are simple. They each bring a hot topic with them. They bring some resources with them, and we have a conversation. So please come back for that one as well. You can be part of the conversation. I'm going to tell you some other ways you can be part of lots of the upcoming conversations in just a moment. But we've got those going. Also remember that many of the replays are available over on our YouTube channel. If you have not already subscribed, please go to usdla.tv and, click the button, ring the bell, do all the, the rules. You know how that works. Lots of good content over there. Bunch of playlists. Go check it out. We always love to also get feedback about it. If you see a topic you want to hear more about, you don't see a topic you do want to hear about, let me know. Let one of us know. Now, unfortunately, some of the webinars are still behind the member paywall. So if you have not already joined as a member of USDLA, please consider doing so. That helps us to provide all of this amazing free content as well. In addition, you'd get some other member benefits and discounts and all kind of good stuff. So speak to whomever you need to speak to at your institution, or you can always join as an individual. We also have student and retired rates. So there's all sorts of options. There's also a trial membership you can check out for 60 days. Come on, button. There we go. Also coming up, we were a little, because of some, hurricanes and things, we got a little delay in getting all of the schedule up on our NDLW page this year, but please go check it out. Most of the speakers are already listed there now, and we're continuing to add them. Hopefully, we'll have them all up there by next week. So I apologize. I apologize for the delay in getting those up. But again, always one of our most popular events is National Distance Learning Week. We'll have free sessions every day. You'll also have a chance to help co-create it this year. So this year, we're doing something a little different. The first session of the day, each day at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, will actually be a daily show, and it will be based around topics and conversations that you all start with us. And those topics, you can go and you can weigh in on all of those. You can scan the code, or you can go to the bit.ly link. I'll put that link into the chat in just a moment as well. So you can go and check it out. It's five questions. A lot of things about, we survived the pandemic. They had a little fun with the theme and made it sort of a zombie theme, but we survived and Halloween and all that. And you can answer the questions and let us know because we don't want to lose the lessons that we learned. There were so many valuable lessons that everybody learned during the pandemic. And some of those lessons really need to be carried over, or you learned new technologies, or you learned new methods, and we want to share those with everybody. So please go take a look at that. And as I said, and then you can come and you can chat every day at 11 o'clock, the week of National Distance Learning Week. All right. Also, save the date. If you can make it to St. Louis, we would love to have you at the National Conference. That's in June 23rd to the 26th. We're going to have some extra special things this year. We're going to have some certification workshops. We're going to have some special workshops around things like the accessibility rules that go into effect in April 2026. So people need to be ready for those. So we have a lot of special things this year. So stay tuned. We'll be talking about that in the newsletter right after National Distance Learning Week. Also, if you or a colleague or somebody you know has done some amazing work that should be recognized, the award submission period is still open. It was extended to November 15th. If you have questions about that, you can contact us, and get your messages in. And then also we have the deadline of the call for proposals, which is to December 15th. And so if you want to speak at the conference, that is an option as well. All righty. Finally, I do need to say a quick thank you to our sponsors. Without them, we would not be able to offer this programming or similar programming for free to all of you. So we do have our platinum sponsor, John Chen with Engaging Virtual Meetings, who will also be back at our conference this year. He did all of the video production last year, and he'll be back to do it again this year. We also have our gold and silver sponsors, many of whom, like Verizon, have been with us for many, many years, and we're very grateful for that. Actually, National Distance Learning Week is available this year, in large part due to the support from Verizon. And then also, not to be forgotten, our bronze sponsors and our exhibitors and friends. And so please take a moment. If you see someone on there you're not familiar with, please go and check them out. They do run the full range of hardware, software, services across the distance learning landscape. And so always something new going on, and always want to take a moment to find out what's going on out there. Apologize, I'm letting some more people in because the doorway just keeps getting full. There we go. More people making it into the doorway. So without further ado, I am going to stop sharing now. And like I said, I will leave it up to our amazing guests today to do their own introductions, but I am going to turn this over to Matthew Bruce because I understand he is going to go first today. So thank you all for being here, both my presenters and my attendees. And with that, please, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Valerie. Really honored to be here today. Thank you to USDLA for having us. My name is Matt Bruce. I am the Associate Vice President of Academic Engagement and Support here at Nash University. I'm grateful just to be part of this conversation, to have my colleagues here with me, just to share a little bit about our journey in trying to foster, an online learning community. That really creates a space for vibrant and authentic engagement amongst our university stakeholders, our students, our faculty, and our staff. This isn't just a recent initiative. This is a body of work that really spans over a decade. I'm excited for you to be able to hear from my colleague Katya, who's been a part of that journey all along, and really, she has a lot of deep-rooted insights that I think you'll really appreciate. Lessons learned over that period of time. I'm also excited to have colleagues from across the organization here to share their unique perspective, within their schools, as faculty members, as deans, and as experts within our student experience division. And so we're going to be able to glean a lot of lessons learned of implementing an online learning community. We call our platform the Commons, so you'll hear that over the course of this presentation, but we're hoping you'll get a mixture of conversation, presentation, and then a panel discussion where we'll weave in some of those insights. Next slide. All right. Our intent for today is really to give you a basis, an overview of our Commons experience, really hone in on the what and the why of our online community, give you some additional context of who we are at Nash University and the student population that we serve, provide some additional insights into our design principles that really have been established over time that really help us define how we offer our online communities. We'll take a look at the future and how Nash University is evolving in this space. And then we'll expand our discussion, as I mentioned, hear from our different stakeholders across our division and our institution to have them share their unique perspectives. We have allowed some time for Q&A, so if there's things that percolate over the course of our conversation today, please know that we will have a chance for that dialogue. We want to have that discussion together. So now I want to pass it over to Katya, who's our director of our commons, who's going to explain a bit more about our commons experience and share a bit more about why we originally created the online community. Katya.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Matt. I'm so excited to be here. And I'm really excited to share with you this body of work. As Matt mentioned, I am the director of the commons. I have been in this particular role actually for 10 years from the inception of this idea to where we are today. I have been with National for 12 years. And so the most of my experience at National has been in this context. So in the context of talking about learning communities online, we're talking today specifically about our NU Commons experience. Our online social space is really focused on community. And it's today specifically available for our graduate and doctoral students in what we call our one-to-one learning teaching modality. So some of our graduate programs and doctoral programs have a one-to-one teaching mode. In that context, our students don't have a cohort of students that they meet in the classroom. They do have a cohort across their program, but they don't meet them in the actual coursework itself. So we created the NU Commons experience. It provides an opportunity for our students to be able to actually meet that cohort, that sense of who else is in this journey with me. It is a supportive academic connection outside of the classroom, across their program, through even into their journey to becoming an alumni at National, and is available 24 hours. So they can jump in at when they're ready to engage with us as a community. So the main drive to be able to do this, our why is so like obvious in some ways, right? Because most of you being in distant learning, we know that online learning can often feel very isolating. One of the things we talk about in the context of NU is that online learning isn't alone learning, that we are actually here with you along this journey. And so we needed a way to provide our students, especially our graduate and doctoral students, a way to find that sense of connection. Because we also know, so this was also the kind of obvious thing that really drove us, is that students who have a supportive community around them are more likely to be successful in their academic journey. So we were curious, like, all right, we know we need to be able to do this. And so let's jump in. Next slide, please, Matt. So we really focused our community, our online space around the sense of community. And so why does community and belonging matter? It immediately removes that feeling of isolation. We get to see that we are not alone, that there are others here with us along our journey. It gives people access to each other, to be able to ask questions, to connect, to be able to share resources, and really developing that sense of support and our ability to learn from each other. So that network of support that really ultimately supports our students as they go forward. And when we talk about belonging, there's so much conversation today about connection and belonging. But the truth is, like, we really need to kind of unpack it. What is it that allows students to feel a sense of belonging? And ultimately for us, it's been around creating those sense of connections with real people across our commons experience. So what have students said about our commons experience? Next slide, please, Matt. Thank you. So we have surveyed our students several times across this past decade, often yearly. Sometimes we've skipped a year with COVID and other things, as you all can imagine. But these are some of the things that our students have said about the experience. So really allowing the students, what we've been so excited about is that students start to identify themselves as being a part of something bigger than themselves, that they belong in the context. They can identify with other students, that they get encouraged by being able to see and hear and find support and get access to resources and just to even witness another student through their academic journey, normalizing their experience that they're having. And so that sense of togetherness, I love this bottom quote, is what we were really striving for, is how do we know that we are really here together, supporting each other along their students' success journey. So who are we? I'm going to give Matt back the mic, and he's going to talk a little bit about who we are.
Thanks, Katya. Just want to give you a bit of context of Nash University. We are one of the largest private nonprofit universities in the United States, currently serving a little over 130,000 students per year. 50,000 of those being degree-seeking students, 80,000 being workforce or professional development students. We have a growing alumni population, 230,000 across all 50 states and 20 countries. We have six schools spanning from our arts, letters, and sciences all the way down to our Stanford College of Education. We have a mission and vision that we truly believe in. It's something that's beyond our strategic plan and our website, but something that really drives a lot of our meetings on a daily basis. We start our meetings with our mission and vision. Our mission is to deliver accessible, world-class student experiences by providing quality programs and services that ensure student success through meaningful learning. Our vision is to be an inclusive and innovative university serving lifelong learners who contribute to the positive transformation of society. We are a veteran-founded institution. Dr. David Chigos founded our institution because he was looking for an institution that would be flexible with our active duty military. Often they are deployed and would have to stop going to school upon deployment. And he wanted to offer something that would be able to flex with the life of an active duty military student. 50% of our undergraduate students are active duty military or military affiliated. We are one of the largest private MSIs and HSIs in the United States. Two-thirds of our students and graduates are BIPOC. We're really proud of the flexible models, as I mentioned, that we've offered, and we've developed many models that we think really adapt to the lives of our students. We serve I would call the new traditional students, our adult learners. We call them anders because they're often juggling being career professionals and being students, being parents and students, active duty military and students, care provider and students. And so we've developed models that would fit with their life stage. So on ground, online, hybrid, 4 8-week classes. We have some 15-week semester-based classes. And that Katya mentioned our one-to-one model where a student is paired directly with a faculty member. We rank first amongst all universities nationwide for the number of master degrees in psychology for all BIPOC students. And finally, our NU students' 3-year loan default rate is half of the U.S. average. Now that you know a little bit more about who we are at Nash University and the students, the types of students that we serve, you know, I really want Katya to be able to have a chance to dive into some of those design principles and how those principles have really guided how we offer our online communities.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. So obviously, as an online institution, we do have a platform. And as in our title says, though, what we've learned over the time is that how we've designed the platform and how we've encompassed and envisioned the community experience is really what's made a difference. So I'm going to talk about five different principles that we've held in the context and have continued to develop in the context of our commons experience. The first one is community identity and engagement guidelines. So immediately upon entering the university, for these one-to-one graduate students, they are a part of our community. We welcome them into our community. They start to get notifications on activity that's happening. They're in a school community, a university community, and several support services communities within our Commons experience. So they don't have to go find all these communities. We're like, you are already a part of us. You know, you are part of your school community. You're part of national main community. As we welcome them, we do share with them our community engagement guidelines that starts with a community promise. So instead of saying, this platform is here to support you, blah, 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 what we tell people and we hold in the context of how we engage with them is that we have a community promise that, you know, we introduce the community experience, not the platform. So we have a community promise that as a community, we are here to support you and each other along your academic journey that's unique to you. And we are here to engage you along that journey. And then we have the engagement guidelines that really sets a stage, not for what you can and cannot do, but for the culture that we hold in the context of how we want to engage and how we hope that you'll engage with us. And everyone, you know, accepts that this is something that they're willing to jump into. It is a voluntary experience. So not all students engage and are a part, but we do immediately bring them in and welcome them and give them an opportunity to engage more with our community. Next slide, please.
Hey, Katya,
Sorry, second.
before
Go
you jump
ahead.
into principle two, I just a little context around communities from a school perspective. So I'll introduce myself later at the panel discussion. I'm Eric Rowe. I'm Dean of the College of Business, Engineering, and Technology. Just kind of an example of those school-specific, college-specific communities. We have communities in COBET, the Business, Engineering, and Technology, for our MBA program, which is one of the largest in the university. Human resources, global business, cybersecurity, data science, right? So in addition to connecting with their peers in the university, the community specific to their program of study, or broadly what would be a department considered in a traditional university, are communities that our faculty support and our students engage in. So just I thought maybe contextualizing the community piece of it.
Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Rowe. And all the schools, much like Dr. Rowe's school, have more specialization and program-specific communities that they either get introduced to maybe within their first month of their program. We also don't overwhelm our student, like, here's all the different places you can. We kind of, you know, walk them into the, like if you were in a traditional in-person experience, walk them into the quad so they can get a breadth of what's available to them, and know that they're a part. And then they get to choose and we welcome them and we invite them into different communities throughout their academic journey with us. Clarity of purpose. So one of the things I did when I first started this work is I interviewed several faculty and staff around, tell me stories about the social experiences you had as a graduate and doctoral student. And people shared with me stories of, you know, late nights studying with their colleagues, playing pool after a class where they've been TAing with their professor and talking about, you know, how the experience went, coffee with both, you know, faculty and staff and colleagues and talking over an opportunity that was maybe available for them to present. And really that sense of them learning the academia kind of community and knowing and sensing that they are a part of this community. So when we started to really kind of tap into that, it became really clear to us that our focus and our purpose is really around helping students come into the academic community and knowing that they belong. And so we are really an academic community focused on their success in the context of being able to connect with each other and support each other. So really academic community, focus on success, providing support. Really, that is the, you know, the sense of what we do and what, and who we are, as a community. So our commons experience, you won't have students often like maybe talking about, you know, Sunday's football game or, and believe it or not, our community space rarely talks about politics. And in that way, because we're there, although it can come up in the context of maybe like a student, who, is just finishing an assignment, they're super excited, that they get to go to their child's football game, or they get to go to, you know, or they get to go to a football game in their community, because they've gotten through their work and they're just celebrating that. We do have students who kind of share that, but it's in the context of them being successful and celebrating, and or maybe in the context of their field of study and sharing those types of experiences. As students come into the community too, and the sense of like our clarity of purpose is that we know that students don't necessarily feel like they belong as they come into the community. They often have imposter syndrome as they come into the academic world. So knowing that, we really think about, you know, how are we welcoming students? When do we engage them? How do we provide them with some information that helps them understand the community and the academic community as a whole? And lastly, I want to share with you, in the context of like kind of student success, is that we don't look at it primarily just through the lens of academia. So we're really here to help students understand life balance, life, school, work balance, helping them go through some hard times as they kind of are approaching it, their academic journey. We've had a couple students over the years who've lost a loved one, you know, in the middle of their program, and they actually came into the community within 24 hours of this happening, saying, "I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. I've lost my spouse. How am I going to get through this program? I'm feeling overwhelmed." And we welcome those types of really personal, real experiences that students have. And in that context, we had like an incredible amount of students really sharing like their sense of support, cheering them on, sharing their condolences, and an opportunity for us as staff and faculty to also be able to find them resources, give them access to mental health support that we have at the university, and support them along their journey. So we really hold the whole student in the context of our kind of vision of success and our purpose. Next slide, please. So our students are, as Dr. Rowe mentioned, in the context of our communities, we actually have faculty and staff stewards. We steward our communities. So we're not here to manage and moderate and, you know, make sure that everybody's in alignment. That is what we ultimately kind of support each other to do in the context of our culture, but we don't do it in the context of like right and wrong. We're, you know, the stewards are there to create community, to again, acclimate the community to the academic world that they're entering, sharing resources, talking about an upcoming webinar, talking about upcoming conferences, sharing just ideas about and checking in with students about, you know, how are you doing this week? What's your priorities? You know, are you having a good week? You know, where are you struggling? How can we help you? And so really stewarding that particular community. Issues and complaints, of course, come up. And what we do in that context is we use it as an opportunity to build trust. Like, here we are. Like, let me hear what's going on with you. Let's find ways to support you along the way. What you're saying is a valid concern. Let's see if we can take care of this. So in that context, we don't see students' engagement as something we need to kind of monitor. It's more in the context of allowing them a space to be able to say and share what's happening with them and their experience. And for us to, all of us, including our students are right there with us and our alumni to support the student along the way. But the community stewards really hold that context. Next slide, please. So our focus with our experience is to engage and not distract. So of course we have a platform, and in the way that we do it, we don't, you know, aren't constantly pinging our members with like, you know, go here, go do that, and sharing notifications. We try to keep it easy and simple and not to distract them. So we have, as a default, a daily activity summary that gets sent to our members. They get to see everything that's happening in their communities. All their likes are included on the top. They're not pinged every single time they're liked. But we do want them to be recognized that their responses or their post has been appreciated by someone else. The activity feed as well as the daily summary is scannable. We don't want you to click into the commons unless you have something that something's there for you today that is of importance or engaging for you. So you can quickly scan the activity to be able to see, is there something I want to follow up on? Is there a webinar? Is there a student's concern that I have some insight on that I want to be able to support? We make it scannable. The platform itself on the top navigation has an easy way to understand, like, did someone reply to a conversation that I posted? Did someone tag me in something? Again, making it super easy, not that you have to go, you know, kind of remember, like, what conversation was that? Where did I have that engagement? We try to make it really easy. In addition, we also have, as they come in, we pre-populate some of the data for them as far as who they are, their program, their school, what role they have within the university. So we don't ask them to immediately start to, you know, give us all that information. We know who they are. So we welcome them in that role. And then we share that information, again, kind of really allowing us to have that real human experience and allowing people to sense their connection with each other upon entering. We have role indicators. You can know who's a faculty member, who's a staff member, who's a student. And then students, staff, and faculty can update their profile with pictures and more personal information at any point in time, but really making it super easy to, again, engage, but not distract them from getting to what they really are trying to do, which is manage all the things in their lives, including their academic life. Next slides.
And Katia, we did actually have a question come up.
Sure. Thank you.
How are the stewards selected and then trained? And how do stewards interact with faculty? And how are they introduced to new participants in the community?
Awesome. So there's a couple of different ways. First of all, many of our stewards within the communities are faculty and staff as far as our main stewards. And that goes back to, you know, transitioning of people coming in and out of roles. And we want to ensure that it's really housed within a department or a school. And they're often volunteered. They come in as volunteers. We kind of say, hey, is anybody, you know, within that, you know, the school will reach out to a department, say, is anyone interested in stewarding this particular community? We do offer a full onboarding training to help them understand not only the technology, but what does it mean and how do we, you know, create community online, and talk about ways to support them in developing that. And then sometimes it's a part of a person's role. Again, every school does it a bit differently. So some of our program or specialization leads may be the one stewarding a particular community. And lastly, I think I've gotten all these questions and I'm trying to, you know, give you the quick and easy response to each of these. There's obviously so much more behind it. But as far as welcoming them, there's two different ways. So for our specialization and program communities themselves, the person who stewards it, we actually facilitate it through my department, but we add them or invite them into a community and we send out the invite from that particular steward or the welcome letter from that particular steward. And it's something that they personalize. We just process it on our side. So they do get welcomed from that, you know, kind of outside, but it comes through email, and the stewards actually have the ability to kind of group email a student or their student population and or their whole community population within the platform itself. So they can, you know, there's the activity feed, but we know also students get super busy. It's in the middle of a busy time in their program. It's a little harder. Maybe going through statistics. There's always a time when we see people kind of maybe backing away from engaging. And then the ability to have the group email that goes out kind of reminds people what's going on, helps them re-engage when they're ready, and keeps that relationship between who's stewarding the community. And we also have steward indicators next to someone's name when they post. So if people know who the steward is posting based on that indicator as well. Thank you, Katie, for bringing that question in.
I would also add that for our faculty that serve as stewards and ambassadors, right? If you think of a faculty load model based on teaching, scholarship, and service, right? This helps fulfill service requirements on faculty meeting their obligations. And so a lot of them voluntarily serve as stewards or ambassadors. I think within my school, all of two of my associate deans serve as either stewards or ambassadors, and probably about 15 faculty. And it's not just in their community, their specific discipline-specific community, right? It might cross to broader communities around interest groups or honor societies, right? That aren't necessarily specific to business, technology, or engineering.
Thank you for bringing that up. I haven't even mentioned that we do have affinity groups across the university. They're university-wide that students can participate in, that they learn. There's a quick, as they go through the welcome in the platform itself, we do remind them that to go check out, you know, discover groups. We do have 70 active groups in the school today, just again for our graduate and doctor, our master's and doctoral students in our one-to-one program. All right. So the last principle, it's about all of us. One of the things we've really learned is that our students don't simply want to connect with each other. They do want to do that, but they also want to connect with the university and their faculty, and they want to do it across their courses, and they want to stay engaged and connected to something, you know, to that wider presence. So having faculty, staff, we have librarians, academic coaches involved in the Commons experience has been something that has been like it's really supported our sense of connection for our students. And so when we have surveyed our students, we see that they say that they're like, yes, I want to be connected to my faculty. I appreciate the fact that I can continue a relationship with a faculty member, you know, outside of my coursework, you know, by seeing them in the Commons. So it's much like walking across campus and you're like, hey, there's so-and-so. I'm so excited to see them. Like students have that type of experience when they see their faculty and or for faculty seeing their students posting. Or we actually announce and celebrate everyone's dissertation defense in the Commons. So faculty will see a student that they had, you know, their first course and be like, they made it. And that really, again, allows that sense of connection, of relationship, of belonging, and that we all matter, you know, which is a big part of that sense of belonging. We had a student years ago in our Sanford College of Education who, as we started the Commons, you know, had a complaint about a policy that was coming in. And she very timidly came in and complained, was kind of trying to figure out her way, trying to share her opinion. And quickly, like, you know, students, faculty, staff, our academic leader, even our provost got involved in that conversation. And although this particular student was a little bit overwhelmed by the attention that her post had, she also became an incredible advocate for our Commons experience, for our academic leadership. Her issue got resolved. It got addressed in a way that she felt was very much in integrity of our mission and our values. And she today is still involved in our Commons 7-8 years later. In addition, she's actually shown up at multiple graduations in order to support our students that she's met through the Commons experience. We have, you know, to Dr. Rowe and Michelle and Dr. Dennis's experience too in COVID, we have also a student in that school who's been with us as an alumni for 7 or 8 years. He's up and from Canada. He comes in, he posts, he likes things, he cheers our students on, he provides resources and webinar information. Again, being that academic community, supporting our students along the journey. So it's super excited. Next slide, please. So our future, you know, we are constantly evolving. And The next phase for us is really allowing this experience to go across all of our programs and schools for all of our NU students, not only our one-to-one models. It's a little bit entering new territory, but we're super excited about this. And we're hoping to, again, develop that sense of a strong sense of connection and belonging, ultimately amplifying our impact, but really empowering our communities to create value for each other. So we're super excited for what's ahead of us. And I'm sure we'll learn more as we bring in and expand our community. So thank you. And I'm going to pass it back to Matt and let's open this up to everyone.
Great. Thank you, Katya. Appreciate that. I hope you're hearing, the thoughtfulness and the collective strategy that Nash University has taken on. I want to commend Katya for her leadership because a lot of that thoughtfulness and inclusivity is really because of her own leadership in this way of really pulling in the voices of our faculty, our students, and our staff, and figuring out what's going to work best for our university community. I want to transition over to our panelists. I'll probably drop the slides in a second so we can see everybody at once. Really want to allow them to share from their perspective how the Commons community has informed their work. Would love each of the panelists to introduce themselves as they kind of respond to my first question prompt, but want to kind of allow for them to share their unique experiences. Let me stop sharing, bring everybody back together. All right. So panelists, would love for each of you to share from your vantage point, how has the NU Commons impacted our students, your faculty, potentially your school, or just our university in general? Maybe I'll start with you, Michelle, Dr. Dennis.
Thanks so much, Matt. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Michelle Dennis, faculty in Dr. Rose College of Business Engineering and Technology. And so this is a great question. I'll just share one reflection regarding the student experience. I can speak to that given my role. So I teach statistics, and often students will come in and they're very hesitant, doubting themselves, a bit of imposter syndrome, and just really could benefit from support. And so I have used the Commons to refer students to an opportunity to connect with others who are maybe taking that course or have taken it in the past, just to see this is feasible. I can do this and have that connection. Years back, when I was an undergraduate student, many years back, if I was in a tough course, going to a brick and mortar institution, of course, at that time, what would I do? Well, I would go hang out in the Commons that I had, right? Which was, the hall. And talk to my classmates and ask, oh, well, how did you figure this out? And we would connect. And so people are doing that online at National University using the Commons. So that's my one reflection there. And I'll pass it to Dr. Rowe.
Thank you. As I mentioned earlier, I'm Dean of the College of Business Engineering and Technology. We've got about 7,000 students in our college. And as Matt mentioned earlier, our students are the Anders, right? 72% of my students are greater than 30 years old. They're active duty military and a student. They're a parent and a student, right? They're working professionals and students. And providing this opportunity for them to connect in a virtual environment is really what's impacted us in terms of this ability to build the community for our students. And some examples, when we have guest lectures, we post it in the Commons and our students can go and involve themselves in the co-curricular activities. We have a business incubator we call the Launchpad. We've had students, we talk about that in the business part of our Commons space, right? And students can bring their ideas, get entrepreneurial assistance, and then participate in the pitch contest. And we've had students that have won the Launchpad contest where they have like the Shark Tank type experience where, you know, at the end they're getting assistance and they're getting funding to take their idea and take it to the next level. So that ability to create the sense of belonging, to connect with your peers, to engage in co-curricular activities that are outside of a classroom, is really where I see the impact. I think on the other side is the faculty and staff engagement, right? My associate deans, about 15 of the faculty, serve as stewards or ambassadors and are active. And not only are connecting with our students, but they're staying connected with our alumni, like the story Katya said of our student who is now 6 years, 7 years later, still active as an alumni in the Commons, and even with the peers. In an online environment, my faculty are all over the country. And so you don't just step out of your office and go to the office next door to talk to your faculty member. You can engage with them in the Commons just the way that you might have had a hallway conversation back in on a brick and mortar campus. Katie?
Yeah, thank you. And I want to say thank you so much for having us here. This is a great opportunity and really great work. I work in student experience. So really what that means is I work with a lot of research and data to truly bring our students' voice to all of our decision making. So this is something, I think this work is amazing. Our students have absolutely expressed in multiple surveys and things like that, that they really want that connection and that sense of belonging. And I think the Commons really provides that. And it's not only for our students to connect with each other, but I think it's a really great opportunity for our faculty and our staff to engage with students outside of the classroom. You know, working in an online university, and for our students too, it can be a little bit isolating, like Katya had touched on. So this is really a great space, for, you know, students to connect with each other, join different groups, talk with other students who are in similar programs. And also, like Katya said, maybe you had a professor in a previous class that you really enjoyed and learned a lot from. You can stay connected with them. And even past graduation, you know, just like we've touched on, and it's an amazing opportunity and really great work. And I'm very happy to support. And then Katya, we did have another question that came in. And it looks like you answered that one.
I haven't answered all of it. So thanks for jumping in. There's you know, a couple different facets to it. As far as what we've seen, as far as behavior in the Commons, the way there's kind of twofold to this. One is like clarity of a purpose, right? So we've been really clear about what the purpose is. So let's just say in the context of solicitation, what, you know, in all realms of what that looks like, we, if there is anything that arises in that way, we immediately, take the post down. We let the student know. We remind students that we're not allowed to solicit, you know, any business, anything personal. Like, this is not a space for that. If they're sharing a resource, we don't consider that solicitation. You know, that's sharing a resource. But if they're, you know, we've had from selling candles to all kinds of things every occasionally come into the play. And, you know, we, in that context too, we really say as we respond, like, let's go back to the selling candles example. We respond in a way like, hey, I'm really excited to see how entrepreneurial you are. And this is not the space for this, you know? And so we don't necessarily try to just always be like, you know, the focus isn't on, being careful, you know, like, I'm trying to find the right word here. You know, we're not like, policing, I guess maybe the right word. Yeah. We're not like policing the site. We're just like noticing what's happening and making sure that it's the proper purpose, you know, and that context is like also like keeping our eyes on monitoring, like we all do, including our students. Like I get pinged sometimes before I even start work about, hey, did you see this in the Commons? You know, like our students are watching what's going on too. So our presence and engagement in the Commons offers in and of itself some monitoring. So one of the things I've noticed too is like when, so if a student is like you know, being a little antsy to another student in the context of how they're responding, when I remind them of the engagement guidelines, more often than not, like the conversation starts to like, you know, come into play and kind of, you know, timmer, you know, slow down a little bit in its intensity. Like all of us, like we've had students who are like, you know, some of these are really outraged. They're leaving the university. You know, they come in and they want to just, you know, say something, you know, as they exit, you know. If it is inappropriate in the way that it's been stated, or if they're somehow, you know, against our code of conduct, we take it down. You know, we do not allow that type of behavior in the comments. We don't allow students to come in and bully against a faculty member or an advisor. Like, that's not allowed. If they want advice on how to handle a student issue or a faculty issue, we're there. Yeah, they can post about that. But there, it is not a space to be able to kind of ridicule or bully another person. And we take it down. We reach out to them. Again, but we reach out to them in a way of like, hey, what's going on? What's happening? Why are you, what's, you know, like, talk to us, tell us what the problem is. We don't start with like, what you did is wrong. We start with something's going on. We're here to help you. What can we help you with? And, you know, as far as, you know, illegal, like we do have like private chats opportunities for our students. In that way, we try to, again, keep our students safe. And so if they do get in something inappropriate, a picture, a communication that's inappropriate, they can report it to us. And lastly, we have a report that we get daily of kind of trigger words. Like, these are probably conversation trigger words that maybe we want to make sure we see, because we can't see every little small conversation. We see the general conversations, but maybe a tangential conversation within a post we don't always see. So we have these trigger words to say, hey, maybe this is some, you know, a room or a conversation you want to look into. And then we determine like what kind of action that we need to take. So hopefully that answers that question.
And I think that's a really good thing to bring up too, Katia, and I know you and I have talked about this, is this really provides our students and our faculty to have a safe space to communicate with each other, because we know there are all different kinds of social media channels. There are different groups and things that, you know, students can connect with each other. But what the Commons does is it really takes out all of your personal information, maybe that you don't want to share with this group. So that is really a great opportunity to join the Commons, have that safe space, know that we are monitoring it in a supportive way. And we really do. And I just saw somebody in the chat that they've been in the Commons for 6 years and have seen very few issues. And that's true, because when there is a problem that arises, I think all of us have taken on some of those, and we take that supportive approach and ask them what's going on. And if there is somebody that's very upset, we want to know that, because we want to support you and fix that for you.
Yeah, if we had more time, you know, our engagement guidelines really inform that clarity of purpose of giving, you know, some of that rationale of why we've developed this space. And those are some guiding principles that really help inform what that looks like. I want to go to our last question to our panelists, just given our time. You know, Katia was able to describe a bit about the future ahead with the Commons, maybe from your unique perspective, faculty, you know, dean, student experience. What excites you about the opportunities ahead of expanding to the Commons to more folks within our institution? I'll go back to you, Dr. Dennis.
Thank you so much. Yeah. So, as we mentioned earlier, we are going to be expanding Commons access to all of our students, those that are in our one-to-one modality and those that are in the class-based modality. So those students in the second group, of course, do have the opportunity to see their peers and connect with one another, but within the online courseroom, right? And so I'm really excited because it's going to bring all of our students together. Students will be able to connect with peers that are in the other modality, learn from one another. One of the cool things that will be happening at some point is that students will be able to move from modality to modality. This is really important because it allows us to customize the experience for these students. So let's say you have a tough time at work. You really need to step back and have more individualized instruction. Then you can go one-to-one. Then things, change for you and you want to go to class-based. And so having students who are in these two modalities in the same space where they can connect, I think is going to be really cool. And then selfishly, as a faculty member, right, I'm excited about having the opportunity to connect with faculty who are teaching in the other modality. Actually, I teach in both, but I'm excited for faculty to be able to connect with one another.
Dean Rowe? You're on mute.
I said what Dr. Dennis said. I mean, that the faculty perspective is spot on there. All of that, I think, is what I'm excited about for the future. The other piece I would add is, we use the loss of momentum framework at NU to look for loss points and momentum strategies to help foster student success, right? And if I'm looking at student progress and student completion and where I can help our students persist through their program, right? The Commons is a way for us to build that sense of belonging and to connect them with those co-curricular activities that are going to help them be part of a community, going to give them the enhancements to the curriculum, and are going to help them sustain and push to the finish. So that's what I'm excited about with it.
Great. And Katie?
Yeah, I am very excited about the expansion for the Commons. And again, I do a lot of survey research, and a lot of our younger students have expressed that they want that sense of belonging too. And I think it's a great way to connect all different degree levels. And I think there's a lot of mentorship opportunities there. And again, opportunities for our faculty to connect with our students in a different way. Very excited to support the work and really embracing that whole human education and meeting every student where they are. I think that is just a great opportunity.
Great. Well, thank you, panelists. Really appreciate it. I'm going to invite Valerie back in. Oh, we do have a few minutes left for Q&A. I know we've been able to respond to some of the questions along the way, but we are open to some additional questions as well.
Awesome. Yeah, this is great. And just for those of you who were not here the last time, one of the things I ran off to do while you all were talking was I went and grabbed the link to when Drs. Rowe and Dennis were here previously. So I'm going to pop that in the chat so you can hear the sort of part one of a discussion that sort of led into why this came about today. Because they were talking about the micro credentials and the various models at National that maybe other people had not considered or had not experienced. So I'm just going to go ahead and put that in. So you get a little bonus content today. And as I said, go ahead and subscribe to the channel while you're there. And then you can find this one when the replay is over there. So I'll just add that while I give people a chance to maybe form another question. I don't see any others right at the moment, but lots of thank yous for being thorough with your previous answers. So thank you for that. And thank you for being here today. I always love Michelle's energy personally. I'm just, she's like, we get in there. We're just like, yeah, let's this is great stuff. So I really appreciate that. And while again, don't be shy. You can unmute yourself or you can add questions into the chat. In a moment, if I don't see, would you speak to how members leave the community should they choose to? That is an interesting question.
So there's two aspects of this, right? There's like not wanting to engage in the social space, not wanting to show up at the quad in the sense. You are always a part of the community as a member of the university. Mm-hmm. Whether you engage in the platform is a whole nother thing. And there's kind of three facets I want to jump into as we briefly kind of finish this off. One is students can turn off. I mean, technically in the Commons itself, they can leave a community whenever they want to. We don't encourage them to do it that way because they might miss some opportunities to understand like an upcoming new resource in the library or a webinar or, you know, again, to have that visual, you know, seeing other students. The commons experience isn't for every student. You know, there are some students who they really just want to focus on their studies. They don't want that. They might not need it. They have a supportive community outside. Whatever their situation is. So they can technically leave a community at any point in time. The platform is always available to them though. So if they want to come back, they always can come in and ask a question. I had a student years ago who she wrote me, she's like, oh, I just graduated. Thank you so much for the commons. It was amazing. It was so good for me. And I went back to her profile. She had never posted. She had never responded to a comment. And so we have this like interesting opportunity where students feel like connected. They feel like they belong and they're getting encouragement. They see they're normalizing their experience, but they may not speak up, you know? And so in that context, like always knowing that we're there for them is a real, again, kind of into that engagement and the stewardship part, like being there for them is what's really important, that we are there for them as a community. So they can leave the community. They can stop notifications if they want. They don't have to get notifications anymore. They can choose to do monthly or weekly notifications. We do have an immediate notification option. We don't recommend people to use it. But so there are ways that they can, you know, not engage in the community if they want to. Besides maybe one or two programs, it is not a requirement of any particular, you know, it's often not a requirement of a program or a course to host or to participate in the commons at any particular time. When they graduate, they leave the commons, but if they want to come back, for our current student population, they have the opportunity to. So they decide they want to come back. They click on the commons again and we welcome them back as an alumni and we give them a choice again. Like, do you want these communities? Like, and re-engage them into the commons experience. So they kind of leave the community as a student and they re-enter as an alumni. So that's also a personal choice. I hope that answers your question, Judy.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Sort of that re-onboarding. That's sort of a conversation in many, business settings right now of re-onboarding as people move from different stages, in your case, student to alum or, you know, from one position to another. So I think that's a lovely system to sort of re-bring them in. Do you have a ballpark idea of like what percentage are the lurkers and what percentage are kind of, because the lurkers are great. They do get a lot out of it. I mean, there's certainly nothing wrong with that. As your story proved. But do you have sort of an idea of.
So I don't have a number off the top of my head, but this is what's interesting. Our survey, and this has been consistent, especially over the last 5 years. We don't have survey open or email open click throughs as far as metrics. So in our survey, we always ask students like, hey, have you, you know, do you read the daily summary? Do you read it every day? Do you read it occasionally? Like trying to get a sense of that. And I have been shocked over the last several years that it's like of those students who respond to our survey, 45% of them say that they basically read the daily summary either daily or throughout that week. They read all of them. And I'm like, that's 45% of the survey respondents. So that's, you know, shocking to me. And that goes back to like, I know that, you know, of those students, not all of those are engaging. And again, I don't have a number off the top of my head. But that's been really, and so that has given me a sense of like the importance again of, you know, being able to provide the community regardless of how often someone might jump in, that being, you know, like walking on campus itself makes a difference, you know? And yeah. So having that kind of walk on campus experience for students is, you know, in a virtual environment gives them a sense of, you know, being encouraged, being not alone. And all those, you know, small little things that we don't often think about, that, you know, cause we're so used to maybe just being in an in-person setting that we need to translate into this type of experience online.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've done it beautifully because that, I think, you know, your story pointed that out to you. It's like, sometimes it's just knowing that the option is there. Like, I don't necessarily want to partake or, you know, whatever, but I know it's there. And that sometimes is, as you said, the absolute most important. So we are just past the top of the hour. I want to pause for a second just to thank those of you who have to jump off and cannot stay with us. We will hang here for a few minutes if our panelists can stay. If they have to run, I completely understand as well. I value everyone's time and appreciate everybody taking the time to be here today. But I am going to, this is also the other way that sometimes questions pop up. I am going to stop the recording in a moment. And then sometimes people who are really shy, and didn't want to ask their question on camera, perhaps sometimes we get an additional question. So once again, thank you all, for attending today. And thank you to the future viewers, because I know many people will be watching this a little bit later on. So stay tuned, come back for a future webinar, and, I'll see you next time. Well, don't go anywhere. I'm just stopping the recording.
Thank you, Valerie.